All right, happy Monday, although we start with some bad news at the beginning of the program today. As we speak, we are watching a massive fire that has broken out at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Watching just a couple hours ago, maybe an hour and a half ago, the spire of this great cathedral literally collapsing. What we're hearing, this, we're in the middle of a renovation project. We know that for sure because we saw the scaffolding surrounding the spire, and clearly there was some work being done. We're told that everybody that was inside of the cathedral at the time has been evacuated as soon as it began. I mean, the pictures, you just, it's so out of control. There's no hope that this cathedral is going to be saved. It's 870 years old. It was Notre Dame, which means, quote, Our Lady, was built in 1160, completed by 1260. It had been modified on a number of occasions throughout the centuries. And its cathedral is the Archdiocese of Paris, visited by more than 12 million people every year. And, you know, watching the enormous plumes of smoke billowing into the city's skyline, firefighters clearly are doing everything possible that they can do. Almost immediately thereafter, they thought it was related to the renovation work. I have heard there are some French politicians. I know one was just on Fox suggesting it might be something else, but it's way too early to go there until we have any type of confirmation. But certainly, you know, we want to get to the bottom of whatever the truth is, and we'll wait, watch, and see. But apparently there have been a series, I guess, of fires in some other churches around Paris that he was referring to. We'll look into that as the program unfolds here. 800-941-SEAN is our number. I don't know how many of you watched Tiger Woods this weekend, but that was one of the most phenomenal sporting events I think I've ever witnessed in my life. I was texting earlier with Jim Gray, who works over at CBS. He and Jim Nance, Jim Gray doing the radio broadcast for CBS, and Jim Nance, I could tell in Jim Nance's voice. Well, I think he's one of the best sports play-by-play guys ever, and he has this versatility. He can do a number of sports, well-known for what he does with golf and the Masters in Augusta, and to watch Tiger Woods complete his comeback. He came back last year a couple of times. I mean, I was nervous watching him putt. I was just one of those moments. Didn't you watch it? You thought it was great, right?
Yeah, I mean, in Sunday, he wasn't particularly good on Sunday. He was great on Saturday. He was putting like he hasn't putted in a decade.
He played lights out Saturday. He played smart on Sunday.
He just let everybody fall apart on Sunday.
No, yeah. Well, listen, I think it was the par five. He went for it in two, got there. Great second shot. Two putts, gets the birdie. He was smart on the 18th hole because he knew he had a stroke to play with. That all he needed was a five, so he didn't use driver on 18. And then,
well, he knows that course like the back of his hand.
Oh, look at the par three 8-iron shot that he hit was, you know, a tap-in. I thought that ball was going to go in the hole. I thought he was going to have a hole-in-one at one point. It's great to see. I know everyone loves redemption stories, and obviously he'd been through so much publicly in his life, both his personal life and the injuries that he suffered. I mean, his body... You know,
four back surgeries.
Yeah, I mean, it's like everyone thinks of golf and tennis like they used to. You know, watch how hard they hit a serve today. Watch John Isner. You know what I want to do with John Isner? He's a friend. I've become friends with him. He serves 155. He's once served 155 miles an hour. You know, all right, just imagine any one match. And then, you know, if it's a round of 256, you know, you got to keep playing all the way through the finals. How many serves you've got to hit? It's 3 out of 5 sets in those major tournaments. And how many practice serves have you got to hit so you can actually play at that level? And there's so much torque. You know, I knew a lot of my son's friends. They all got these stress fractures. Amazingly gifted and talented kids. Or disc issues in their teens. And don't get me started, because the stupid USTA overplays these juniors. They're playing two age groups at once. You're playing local tournaments, and you play higher-level local tournaments in two age groups. Then you get finally into a regional tournament and then a low-rated national tournament, and then after the national tournament, a better national tournament, and they have four super nationals a year. You don't ever stop playing. It's like you play every. You almost have to play every weekend. And at some point, you know, then they'll have – this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. They have kids play two single matches a day. And if you're playing singles and doubles, two doubles matches a day. You know, imagine, look at the torque and the body turn and think of your spine in the process of the way that Dustin Johnson hits a golf ball or Tiger Woods hits a golf ball. I once actually had the honor of watching Dustin Johnson on a practice range. You can't follow the ball at some point. I don't have perfect 20/20 vision. In other words, he hits it so far, and it's got this spin, so it's in a perpetual rising motion that doesn't stop. It's like defying gravity at some point. And, you know, all these guys can now drive 300 yards more.
They're all influenced by Tiger, because Tiger was the one that, you know, he got all bulked up like, you never used to see golfers do. Now all these young guys.
Jim Nantz pointed that out.
They all follow his lead.
Well, he's strong and he's physically fit. And yeah, I mean, look, I'm not trying to make fun of some of the older golfers.
Tiger can't hit the ball like these young guys can, though.
He doesn't want to hit. You don't need to hit the ball that far.
Well, no. Well, he gets on guile more than power now.
Yeah,
power used to be his thing.
Listen, the perfect example of what you're saying is true is on that par three that he nearly holed. And he had the tap in, what hole was that, 16, heading into, you know, 17 and 18 to win the tournament. That was on the heels of the par 5 they had also birdied, because he knows the course so well. You know, he knew exactly the distance for his second shot to reach the green in the par 5 and 2. But again, the amount of torque in practice, it's like they've got to hit millions of balls in practice. Millions of shots to get to the level. That's why we are in awe of these athletes. You know, we talk about football players and hockey players getting the crap beaten out of them. Listen, all these other sports now, it's the same thing. You're beating up your body. You're doing things that they never did before. You can't compete in tennis. I don't care if you're playing women's tennis, men's tennis, and not serve the ball 110 miles an hour. Or else they're going to crack your serve, and they're going to get a free point every single time. It's unbelievable. You know, I remember my buddy, I won't mention names. There's a couple of really good people that I got to know. One is a kid in New Jersey, and he was the number one kid in the country for a while. He hurt his back was hurt for years. And then another kid out in California, the guy who put on the tennis channel, his son, was number one in the country when he was 14 years old. Both had horrible back injuries. It's just because the torque.
And that's hard to come back from, a back injury.
No, I mean, it's either stress fractures in the back. I mean, I can identify the names of 16 kids that I know had stress fractures. I can identify others with disc bulges at that age. And it's because they're overplaying them. It's, you know, now they're getting smart. Look at Tommy John surgery in Major League Baseball. Right? Tommy John surgery. They're now doing it to kids. That's how
they're doing it to kids before they get the injury.
It's crazy. No, but the level of performance now, we keep, you know, look at what's the reliever on the Yankees that throws 100 miles an hour?
Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, Chapman, I mean, and he was throwing 97 and the team was upset.
Well, he used to be the anomaly. He came into the league for 103. Now, every team has two guys that can throw 100 miles an hour.
It's crazy. Yeah. And then to get it over that little plate, I was a pitcher. By the way, when I was a pitcher, it was either one or two. You're either going to get me on a good day or a bad day. I was either going to strike everybody out, or I was going to throw it over the backstop. There was no in between.
Well, I hope you didn't throw a slider when you were 14, 15 years old.
I did.
That ruins your elbow.
I used to take the ball like this, throw it, arc it in the back of my head, and come down like that. And I'd aim the ball at the batter's head. And at that age, they'd back out. They'd back away like a right-handed batter. I'm a right-handed pitcher.
They'd start a fight now doing that.
No. They'd back out, and it would drop in the strike zone. That's how that was my strikeout pitch. And it worked so good. It was a sinking curveball. And, yeah, I started throwing it even on the small mound when I was young. But my elbow's fine. My other elbow's not, because when I fell off a roof, 2.5 stories, you know, from my elbow down was totally disconnected from the rest of the arm. It was dangling there. And I went, boom. And somehow I clicked it back in. Doctor said that was 1 in a million shot. And then for all the years, all my buddies lost teeth in hockey because I played ice hockey, roller hockey, street hockey. We played everything.
You've been smart to stay in baseball.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, if you're a pitcher in baseball, you're going to get Tommy John surgery. You can't. Well, it depends what position you play. Play, you know, shortstop or third base. Or
yeah, if you're a relief pitcher, you can hang around a good 15 years.
Mariano Rivera proved that. He was amazing. But he was an anomaly. No one's like Mariano Rivera. And it's just the best there ever was.
You can get yourself a nice 3-4 year contract for $15 million and you can retire.
Okay, they don't take fat old guys with gray hair anymore playing, you know, Major League Baseball.
You remember David Wells, don't you?
Yeah, I remember. He was still feisty in his
Bartolo
old age.
Bartolo Colon is 47 years old.
He was amazing when he came back. I mean, he was still playing pretty well.
He used to throw 100, now he throws 80 and still gets people out.
CeCe Sabathia, it seems like he's got a little stick back, which is good to see. I always thought he was a great pitcher. Anyway, we'll see. But anyway, we're watching a lot of stories today. We'll update you. It is tax day. I know many of you are miserable. The only good news out of it is, even the New York Times admits most Americans benefited from the Trump tax cut. That must be killing them. A leading pro-Democrat investment firm is predicting Trump's reelection victory. We'll give you some of the facts on the economy. I actually think the president's saying, well, why don't we move all of the illegal immigrants into all of your sanctuary cities? And to watch the Democrats have a fit over that is amazing. There's still a freak out over the president's tweet of the Omar video about 9/11 with the 9/11 video associated with it. I'm going to explain exactly what this week is going to be and what you can expect. The lying, rage, destroy Trump media mob has one, quote, political bullet in their gun, meaning political attack. So to be clear, everything else is now going to reverse itself in a major way. And when the Attorney General Barr mentioned the word spy on the Trump campaign, he sent a signal. All of this is now going to come tumbling down. Mark Meadows is predicting that there will be criminal referrals with the IG's report. So I'm going to explain how this week is going to evolve before the release of the Mueller report. We already know there was no collusion and no obstruction. We already know the answer. You know, there are more than 34 million American smokers. Now, I bet that finding a satisfying alternative to cigarettes is at the top of your list if you're a smoker. Look, I've been there before. But after many years of smoking, I finally made the switch to Juul. There's no more worrying about the way my clothes smell, worrying about what people are going to say. With Juul, everything is so much easier. Now, Juul is a vaporizer that contains nicotine for a satisfying transition. When I found Juul, it was a complete game changer. Now, Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to cigarettes. From its simple to use interface to its clean technology, well, Juul has no cigarette ash, odor, or mess. So if you're one of the 34 million adults who smoke, know that there is an alternative to cigarettes. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's nothing like you've tried, visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. And warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. So after 2.5 years of lying, tinfoil hat conspiracy theories, and everything in between, well, now we are at the point where the Mueller report is going to be out with some redactions to secure methods and sources, which are just general. You can't release grand jury information, innocent people's names, etc. Now, remember the letter that Bill Barr, the attorney general, put out And remember what he said. He said, as the report states, and he quotes the Mueller report, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Okay, you can't be, there's no ambiguity. That's not Barr's interpretation. So we want the whole report. What about obstruction? Now, we got a little insight from Law and Crime. Apparently, I always thought it was dumb that the White House counsel, Don McGahn, had spent 30 hours in front of Mueller. Well, if that's not privileged, I don't know what would be. And nobody knew what he said, but he said, I got finished being yelled at for 2 years. Well, that might be some insight into what Don McGahn said. So Don McGahn, all right, let's say that Don McGahn said, we need to fire Robert Mueller. Okay, that's not obstruction. We need to fire Comey. Well, you can fire Comey for any reason or no reason at all, according to Comey. Or I hope Michael Flynn doesn't get in trouble. Oh, that'd be terrible. No, because Michael Flynn is facing a jail sentence, perhaps, for lying to the FBI. So he didn't stop that. What did he stop? And here's the interesting thing. In the letter that Barr wrote, he said, over the course of the investigation, we've engaged the offices. This is ongoing discussions with department officials regarding the legal and factual matters at issue in the special counsel's obstruction investigation. After reviewing the special counsel's final report, consulting with department officials, Office of Legal Counsel, applying the principles of federal prosecution that guide our decisions, the Attorney General and I concluded evidence developed during the special counsel investigation is not sufficient to establish the president committed any obstruction of justice. And it wasn't regard to constitutional principles of indicting a sitting president. Now, what I'm going to tell you next is what's going to happen this week. Simply Safe Home Security, this is a truly good, honest, great company, and you don't find many of those anymore. And Simply Safe is 100% committed to helping you fear less in your home. Now, they'll protect your home 24/7, and they really take care of you. Now, Simply Safe CEO started the company from the ground up right at his kitchen counter. Now it's the fastest growing home security company in the entire country, and they protect millions of Americans every single day. But they still run like a small company with the same values that they started with. And that's why Simply Safe has no contracts, no hidden fees, no installation fees. Now the system is wireless and practically invisible in your home, and you can order it online, just a few clicks, and you'll see that it feels good to fear less. Just go to simplysafe.com/Sean to get 10% off. That's simplysafe.com/Sean. Free shipping, free returns, and 10% off because you listen to my show. simplysafe.com/Sean.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Still watching, waiting. We don't have a cause. Apparently, it was only 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes after the cathedral at Notre Dame in Paris had closed when this fire broke out. We don't know the reason. Nobody is really officially given one, except that they think they've linked the issue to a renovation works. I know there's a lot of chatter on the internet. One particular politician, I guess, was on Fox News with Shep, had said something to the effect that maybe he thought otherwise, but we have no knowledge of any of that at this point. If we do get it, we'll bring it to you immediately, obviously. But we know, I mean, this is a cathedral that is 870 years old. It is visited by some 12, 13 million people each and every year. It was in the middle of a major renovation. Watching the spire collapse, it had the feeling, we were all watching it together. We knew it was inevitable at some point, as it was engulfed completely in flames, as the entire cathedral is engulfed in flames. I mean, even now in the dark sky, you can just see it is all lit up and on fire. Firemen have been doing their very best. And anyway, the frame is burning after the spire collapsed, and I don't think there's much they can do, really. I don't think there's any hope of saving anything at this point, which is a shame. It was actually built in 1160, completed in 1260. Haven't been modified, obviously, at different points and different times. We'll watch the story and let you know any more details that become available. So what's happening this week, they announced on Thursday morning they will be releasing, as was promised, the middle of April by the Attorney General, that he is going to release the full Mueller report with the few redactions. I'm told it's not really a lot. My sources are saying maybe 10% or so, which would be, well, number one, you can't reveal. It's illegal to reveal any grand jury proceedings or testimony. That you can't reveal that. It's unlawful. So the attorney general is still governed by the laws of the land. Secondly, yeah, if there are sources and methods that would be compromised, yeah, of course you can't reveal that. Remember the Democrats claiming, well, this is what Devin Nunes did. This is the first time in history. Now they're begging for sources and methods to remain and grand jury testimony, which would be illegal to remain. Now, the most interesting thing, I'm going to go over this again, because I think very smartly what the attorney general did. Remember, he explained that Mueller's investigation, which went on almost two complete years now, had 19 full-time lawyers assisting a team of approximately 40 FBI agents, intelligence analysts, forensic accountants, and other professional staff. They had issued 2,800 subpoenas, issued almost, which is pretty insane, 500 search warrants, obtained more than 230 court orders for communication records, and issued almost 50 orders authorizing the use of pen registers and 13 requests to foreign governments for evidence and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses. One of them, of course, being the White House counsel, Don McGahn, which I'm going to get to in a second based on a long crime article I read over the weekend. Anyway, so what they concluded was pretty obvious. And what he did is he actually took the words, as the report states, now this is Russian interference, collusion, if you will, into the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Funny, nobody seems to care that Ukraine is now begging America to take evidence and saying they did collude and they did try to interfere in our elections. And they're willing to volunteer the information and they say they did it to help Hillary Clinton. Not one person in the media cares. There's no I believers out there saying what they were saying about Justice Kavanaugh, about the Attorney General of Virginia. There's such phony hypocrites on every level. Anyway, so the special counsel investigation from Barr's initial four-page letter saying that he would release it, and now that'll be Thursday morning this week, did not find the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in its efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election. That is now the fourth time that conclusion has been made. A nine-month FBI investigation has concluded the same. The House Intel Committee investigation concluded the same. The Senate Bipartisan Intel Committee investigation concluded the same. And then Barr, the Attorney General, says, as it relates to the issue of collusion, and that is that the investigation did not, this is from Mueller's report, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Okay, it can't get any more clear on the issue of collusion. Now, what does that mean? First of all, it means that your lying media mob, tinfoil hat conspiracy media mob, has been wrong for 2+ years. Russia, 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 Russia. Now, what the media has slowly evolved into is, well, they're moving in numerous directions. They're trying to throw anything against the wall that they think might eventually stick and hurt Trump or justify some ridiculous impeachment effort of theirs. This has been an epic fail of historic proportions for Democrats and for the media. So on the issue of obstruction, the special counsel says that the special counsel's decision to describe the facts of his obstruction investigation without reaching any legal conclusion leaves it to the attorney general to determine whether the conduct described in the report constitutes a crime. Oh, there's our hope. Well, then it goes on. Over the course of the investigation, the special counsel's office engaged in discussions with certain department officials regarding many of the legal and factual matters at issue in the special counsel's obstruction investigation. After reviewing the special counsel's final report on these issues, consulting with department officials, including the Office of Legal Counsel, and applying the principles of federal prosecution that guide our charging decisions, well, the deputy attorney general has been there from day one, the man that appointed Robert Mueller himself, Rod Rosenstein, and I, meaning Attorney General Barr, have concluded that the evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation is not sufficient to establish the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Then he makes a disclaimer. Well, did you make that decision as a result of the constitutional consideration or Justice Department policies that you cannot indict a sitting president? He said our determination was made without regard to and is not based on the constitutional considerations that surround the indictment of and criminal prosecution of a sitting president. Then he explains, well, how did me and Rod Rosenstein get to this decision? He said, in making this determination, we noted the special counsel recognized that the evidence does not establish that the president was involved in an underlying crime related to Russian election interference. In other words, what would the president be obstructing if he's not obstructing a criminal investigation? For example, people would say because the president kept saying witch hunt, that's what he's obstructing. Or that the president in frustration said, you know, this is ridiculous. We ought to fire Mueller. I'm sure he expressed it many times probably. But he didn't do it, did he? Or get rid of Rod Rosenstein. That didn't happen. Or get rid of Jeff Sessions. That didn't happen. Well, he fired Comey. Okay, he fired Comey before Mueller was appointed. And remember, Comey testified and said, I could be fired for any reason whatsoever or no reason at all. I serve at the pleasure of the president. So that's not it. Well, the president wished that Michael Flynn wouldn't get in trouble. Okay, Michael Flynn got in trouble. He did not obstruct a thing. And so I'm putting together in my mind, there's a couple of articles. One, I think, was on Mediaite. One, I think, was a reference in the New York Times. No, ABC had a tweet that I saw that mentioned Don McGahn. And I said, okay, it never made sense that the White House counsel spent 30 hours with Robert Mueller to me anyway. So he spent 30 hours. Then there was something that, well, he said this weekend or recently that you might be hearing a lot more about me. I spent the last 2 years getting yelled at. Okay. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, he doesn't like Trump. So I'm taking it to the point. Don McGahn will probably be quoted in this thing as saying, oh, he wanted to fire, but it doesn't matter if he wanted to. He didn't. I had to talk him out of the president's venting. Now, here's the other irony in all of this. Do Democrats really care about believing women that are victims of violent rape or sexual assault, or only if it's Kavanaugh, but not the lieutenant governor of Virginia? It's interesting, right? Great question. Do they really care about, you know, they really think walls are immoral when they were voting for them and voting to build them, pay for them, and won't care about DACA and Dreamers? No, not if Trump does it. How many instances? It's the same with obstruction. You watch when this comes out and they'll get their five lines. Don McGahn says the president was going to do this, but he didn't do it. Maybe Don McGahn takes credit. Well, first of all, nobody gets credit for what Donald Trump decides. If Donald Trump wanted to listen to people, he wouldn't tweet. I'm just telling you, everybody said to him, don't tweet. Don't tweet. You got to stop. You got to stop killing yourself. Stop, 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 stop. Nobody could. He makes up his own mind. You got to stop attacking. He makes up his own mind. So the idea that Don McGahn or anybody else, just because, now, do I think the president vented about General Flynn, Comey, Mueller. He was doing it publicly. And he didn't do any of these things. So that's where I think this is going. And you're going to hear the media go absolutely apoplectic. Now, it also goes on to say, in making the decision, well, okay, there was no underlying crime. And then it says, as it relates to Russian election interference, that while not determinative, the absence of any evidence or crime bears upon the president's intent with respect to obstruction. Generally speaking, to obtain and sustain an obstruction conviction, the government would need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a person acting with a corrupt intent engaged in obstructive conduct with a sufficient nexus to a pending or contemplated proceeding. Oh, the president didn't have the intent either, which the statute requires. But here's the thing. You watch this week when this comes out Thursday and the insanity will ensue. It is their last attack on this. And it's going to die like everything else has died. But here's the good news. By the way, Mark Meadows said today it's highly likely the Inspector General Horowitz will issue criminal referrals.
Well, Jim Jordan and I met with Inspector General Horowitz. He and his entire team have been doing a great job, and I might add an independent job, to verify some of the things that we have long assessed as problems. And you're right. Chairman Nunes was, with these criminal referrals, the things that he alleges, we've been able to see, even in the non-classified area, some real reason.
Let me finish this because I'm going to run out of time here. So this is what's next. This is their last gasp, and it will be desperation. But he wanted to, but he didn't. But there was no underlying crime. But here's the thing: when Hillary deleted the emails, and acid washed her hard drive, and used bleach bit and busted up her devices, what was her intent? Her intent was to eliminate the evidence of a violation of a felony, the Espionage Act, where she had top secret classified information on a mom and pop shop bathroom closet. That's intent. And just like in the case, I believe, but not if you're a Democrat, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. Same hypocrisy. But here's what's next. We're going to have more closed door testimony, like James Baker's explosive testimony last week. You see in this testimony, the Orrs, they're turning on everybody, and Page and Strzok are turning on the then Attorney General Loretta Lynch, which asked the question, what did Lynch know? When did she know it? Then we're going to have the criminal referrals of Nunes. Then we have Barr announcing his investigation into the investigators. Then we have spying that he said took place. Then we have Horowitz and the FISA and Jordan and Meadows saying, yeah, there's going to be criminal referrals with that. Then we got the Uber report on leaking. Then we're going to get the FISA warrant applications, which are going to show that they used the Russian dossier, which is in itself a criminal, that they committed a fraud on the court. Then we're going to get the 302s. Then we're going to get, after that, all the other evidence. Gang of Eight information, and the Democrat conspiracy theorists have nothing left. That's what this week is about. That's what's going to happen this week. All right, as we continue hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. If you're just joining us, really sad, tragic days. The fire now has consumed the historic Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Vatican has just spoken out, and they said it's devastating. There is a number of reports we've not independently confirmed of. Well, first, the French Interior Ministry official said firefighters might not be able to save Notre Dame at all. And we literally watched before our eyes as the spire been engulfed in flames. We knew it was a matter of time and came down. They're in the middle of a major renovation. There are numerous reports that there might be, out of this tragedy, some good news. The church had just closed five or 6 minutes prior, and most of the people that were in there when the fire started, they think everybody got out safely. Other issues, apparently there are reports that the artwork had been saved, which would be pretty huge, as well as the treasure of the cathedral, in other words, the crown of thorns, the holy sacraments. But the main spire, of course, dating back to the 12th century, collapsed. First built in 1160, completed 100 years, completed by 1260. And they had been in the middle of this renovation for some period of time. The picture's devastating. They still, literally, the next 90 minutes will be crucial, according to the Paris fire commander, in any effort to save any of the remains. As you could, it's just a full-on effort by the firefighters. What I was able to read during the break about these firefighters, that Notre Dame has in its favor, the At Pompier Paris are the world-class firefighters. Somebody wrote on Twitter that they saw their work when he served on a board, and they have strong, dedicated, skilled responders. You know, this is when I give all my firemen friends in New York a hard time. I'm so horrible. Because, you know what, when they're not busy, they cook the most elaborate, delicious meals you'd ever want to have in a firehouse. You want to eat well? I mean, you want to stay skinny, forget it. It's not going to happen in New York. And then, you know, they work 24-hour shifts. And if it's a slow period, they're allowed, especially senior guys, are allowed to get what they call a little rack time. So in case they're called. And usually the junior guys, the rookies, and you only have a couple of years on the job, they're left cleaning the fire trucks, cleaning the firehouse, cooking the meals, cleaning up after. And it's you know, you earn your stripes. You earn your time. And it's really fun when you get to be a senior firefighter because all the junior guys have to do everything. But then 9/11 happens. Yeah, I don't think the perks match up to the risk of walking upstairs while everybody else instinctively is running in the other direction. But you do it because you're dedicated to saving other people's lives. There was an attempt. It's weird that this happened on Friday, and I'm not making any connection here whatsoever. This cathedral, there was a bombing attempt on it back in 2016. It was a car that had seven canisters of gas. And at the time, they were able to link it at that time, and I'll explain that in a second. Information they got from intelligence services there, according to then-President Holland, accused of leading this Inez Medina, was accused of leading the bomb attempt, posed as a man under the name Abu Omar on social media, recruiting jihadis in that particular case back in 2016 to join her in attacking Notre Dame, successfully recruited another person, a mother of three. She then stopped hearing from the woman, but contacted Medina. And anyway, police then arrested Amel Sakow and Sarah Halvot, all three women armed with knives during the arrest. One accused of stabbing a police officer. Anyway, she was the main woman involved in that incident, was a female jihadist posing as a man to recruit other women as the city was on high alert. Now, that was in September of 2016. 19-year-old woman allegedly led an all-female jihadist cell in France, posed as a man to entice other women to join. And this past Friday, March 20th, no, I'm sorry, that was a month ago. Anyway, there'd been a series, I guess this past Friday she was sentenced, so that's the point of that. And from that incident, but there was a story on March 20th in Newsweek by Brendan Cole, and the headline was Catholic churches are being desecrated across France and officials don't know why. Nobody is saying any of this has anything to do with this, but there has been issues involving the church being targeted in the past. Remember before the 9/11 attacks on the Trade Center, remember we had the first Trade Center bombing in that case. So we, you know, nobody has given a definitive answer. Many have said it's likely connected to the $6.8 million renovations going on. But, you know, in this day and age, you just have to look at any and all potential causes of anything like this. In other news, so the president was interesting this weekend. He was on a roll this weekend. And he called out New York State Democrats over the weekend for giving free college tuition to illegal immigrants, but refusing to do the same for children of soldiers who sacrificed their lives for this country. Now, late Friday night, the president called out the New York State Democratic Party for blocking additional tuition assistance for children of deceased or injured vets. In New York State, Democrats blocked a bill expanding college tuition for Gold Star families after approving aid for illegal immigrants, the president tweeted. No wonder so many people are leaving New York. Very sad. And the president was referring to the stalled state bill that would add funding to a program that provides tuition, college housing payments to kids, spouses, financial dependents of either slain or severely disabled or missing soldiers who served after 1980. Passed twice in the Senate, but never made it out of the Democratic-controlled assembly in New York. But the state did provide $27 million in this year's budget for tuition assistance for the kids of illegal immigrants. College funding for veterans' families was not increased. Now, the president has come up with this idea of a sanctuary city refugee resettlement plan. It's got everybody worked up. You know, we've been hearing from all the experts all weekend long insisting that the president doesn't have the legal authority to resettle asylum-seeking illegal aliens in sanctuary cities around the country. That, by the way, may not be true. Somebody needs to explain how then Obama got away with resettling tens of thousands of Syrian refugees in cities all over the country over the objections of 30 governors. And if you go back to 2016, Tribune Services, the most recent count shows that 11,491 Syrian refugees had arrived in the U.S. since October, the start of the federal fiscal year. Many have gone to states that protested, like Texas and Arizona, which have received about 825 refugees each. The Obama administration planned to accept at least 110,000 Syrian refugees in the coming year. Okay. Then we had an incident encouraged, I guess, by Open Borders Democrats in Washington. Now all these people say we better hurry and get in the United States before Trump finishes this wall or we'll never get it. Anyway, the Post, New York Post, pointed out Mexican authorities said a group of 350 migrants broke the locks at a gate at the Guatemalan border on Friday, forcing their way into Mexico to join the larger group of migrants already trying to make the trip to the southern border of the United States. Migrants were reportedly acting hostile and aggressive. The group of 350 pushed past police guarding the bridge, joined a larger group of 2,000. That's now becoming a big issue. The president also won a huge court victory late Friday in his battle as it relates to keeping tens of thousands of asylum-seeking illegal immigrants on the Mexican side of the border until their claims are evaluated. And actually, it came from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which almost always takes the left-wing side. Anyway, the Trump administration can continue to send asylum seekers back to Mexico after the appeals court temporarily reversed a ruling that halted the policy. That's an interesting win. But if you remember, Obama did this whole the exact same thing. It was funny because we watched, literally, who was it, Cher that was freaking out about this. Literally saying, we can't even afford it. Anybody that's here, why are we taking on all these other people? We can't afford it. Oh, really? I mean, it's like Donald Trump lives in Democrats' heads 24/7. You know, I'm reading some interesting stuff. The president now accumulating more money than any other president at this point in his presidency for reelection. Money matters. Big labor, the Associated Press had an article about. You know, one of the big constituencies of the Democratic Party, but that may change. You look at the economic statistics, why wouldn't big labor support Donald Trump, who actually creates real jobs? Just in the energy sector alone, we're going to have hundreds of thousands of career-paying jobs for people. Even truck drivers, you go train truck drivers in the oil industry and pay you $100,000 a year. And, I mean, it's amazing. A red wave is rising, FoxNews.com, and the Democrats are powerless to stop it. But once the Hill has an article, Democrats are getting smart, mapping out an early 2020 strategy to retake the House. And then you got the more extremism. You got Cory Booker, sanctuary city proposal of the president reflects his contorted view he has about humanity. Bernie Sanders, Medicare for All plan includes paying for illegal immigrants, but you can't get your own health insurance. And then Bernie had to defend being a millionaire this weekend. I didn't know it was a crime to write a good book. No, Bernie, why didn't you donate it to the poor? You know, it's interesting to watch Democrats. They're all happy about immigration, except when the president talks about, okay, well, we'll put them in your cities and they'll be protected by your policies. Then you got this guy. This is pretty interesting. I'm not falling into this Mayor Pete. I mean, it's interesting. His name is Buttigieg. That's his name. Pete Buttigieg, I guess, is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, the home of Notre Dame. I mean, I guess to his credit, he looks like, you know, he could be debating on a college debate team at Harvard. Sounds like it, too, when he gives a speech. I thought it was a terrible speech. Everybody's hyping. This is it. We can change everything and it'll be different. We got to rethink everything. That means be a socialist. I don't think that's a good idea. We know socialism fails. And it's not going to work. But yeah, I'm actually enjoying, though, you know, watching the New York Times have to admit that most Americans benefited from the tax cut of Donald Trump. You know, they didn't want to go there. You know, they don't want to admit that. And, you know, and by the way, Nancy Pelosi asked on 60 Minutes last night, what a fluff interview that was, about AOC and friends. That's like only five people. No, not exactly. Beto O'Rourke's family connections are a key to his millions. Much of Robert Francis's wealth came from his parents and his wife. O'Rourke co-owns a shopping mall worth seven figures. He received half of it as a gift from his mom. And his wife has a trust fund valued between $1 and $5 million. And in 2017, Beto sold an apartment complex, which he co-owned with his mom, to a family friend and campaign donor. Whoopsie daisy. Yikes. Wonder how that's going to go. What else do we have? The controversy over Congresswoman Omar continues. Yeah, well, what she said, you know, that thing that happened on 9/11. Well, we know what that was. We lost nearly 3,000 Americans in the worst attack on our homeland in history. Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Think of those two dates. Linda goes, are you sure that's exact? They only have one attack left, and that's obstruction. But Barr says, well, number one, you need intent. Like, oh, Hillary had intent. We know why she deleted, acid washed, busted up devices. Because she knew that she had violated the Espionage Act. You can't have top secret classified information on a private server. She had it. That's one. She wanted to get rid of the evidence. No underlying crime. Pleading your innocence or saying this is a witch hunt or we should fire Mueller. Why don't we fire Mueller? Or saying that I hope that General Flynn doesn't get in trouble or this is ridiculous. We ought to fire Sessions. We ought to fire Rosenstein. But he didn't do any of it. He's venting. He's venting at what, you know, I remember Trey Gowdy. If you're innocent, act like you're innocent. You know how innocent people, I think, act? They proclaim their innocence. Now we have four investigations. Not guilty, not guilty, not, you know, no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. So what's following this? Well, number one, all the deep staters, we can tell in their closed door testimony, they're creating a circular firing squad. Page and Strzok are blaming the attorney general and probably even Obama. And then you got, you know, so we have more of those, that testimony. Then we got the criminal referrals of Nunes. Then we got the new Barr investigation on, yeah, real spying. Horowitz report on FISA, likely according to Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, to produce criminal referrals there. Oh, and then we have the Uber report, the FISA applications, the 302s, the Gang of Eight. They've got nothing. This is their last shot. And they're going to try and make it into something it cannot legally ever be. And that would be obstruction, which, by the way, that's already been concluded, too. It's over, guys. You've been wrong. You've lied. You bought the big lie and you sold the big lie.
You've been in the business of politics. Do you think that he sees advantage in torquing up the crisis?
Donald Trump is the arsonist who gets the credit for putting out the fire. He is going to cause worse out-migration and asylum seeking from America by cutting off all U.S. aid, and then he wants to be the person who gets the credit for stopping it. What we need is someone who will not play games or politics with people's lives or the security of this country, but will invest in the smart decisions and policies, like investing in Central America to stop the outflow before it even begins. We can try to address these problems at the U.S.-Mexico border with walls or open arms, or we can address them in the countries of origin before they ever become a problem, and that's what I want to do.
And that's why I'm here today, to tell a different story than make America great again. Because there's a myth being sold to industrial and rural communities, the myth that we can stop the clock and turn it back. It comes from people who think the only way to speak to communities like ours is through resentment and nostalgia. They're selling an impossible promise of returning to a bygone era that was never as great as advertised to begin with.
You want to decriminalize small amounts of opioid use and possession. Does that include heroin?
Yes, it does. We need to decriminalize opiates for personal use. And as you might not be surprised to hear from that, like, I'm also for the legalization of cannabis. We need to remove that from the federal controlled substance.
So cannabis and opioids, including heroin, any other illegal drugs you want to decriminalize?
It would be the opiates that are the most common, which unfortunately right now include heroin and fentanyl.
What about cocaine?
Cocaine, it would not be on the list of substances I would engage in this because of the addiction has very different features.
All right, there you have three of the Democratic candidates for 2020, radical, extreme, socialist in every way, the last cut. Andrew Yang, who wants to decriminalize heroin and fentanyl, like 3 grains of salt, or the equivalent size of 3 grains of salt of fentanyl will kill a 250-pound man. Genius. Absolutely genius. Before that, it was that was Mr. Mayor Pete, if you care. That was his name is Pete Buttigieg is his name. And, you know, what's amazing about this guy is, who is he? What have you done? And you come up with this brilliant idea. We're going to do something totally different. Yeah, socialism. Failed. Tried. Million times. Any way you want it. We are still following the tragedy out of France. It's been unfolding all day. The fire breaking out at Notre Dame, the cathedral, 870 years old. Watching the spire collapse earlier today was heartbreaking. They were in the middle. You could see a lot of the scaffolding that was surrounding that spire. And it's a $6.8 million renovation they were in the midst of. They believe it's connected to that. We haven't gotten any definitive answers. We'll continue to watch and follow that story as we continue here. Anyway, John McLaughlin, pollster, strategist. And as we look at these 2020 candidates, you know, it's pretty interesting. First of all, we have Donald Trump has now accumulated more money to run for re-election than any first-term sitting president ever. That's point number one. Matt Towery is with us. He likes to consider himself retired, but he's anything but retired because every time there's a big election, I get a full, accurate analysis about what's about to happen. And I basically steal it, and I say, this is what's going to happen, and just take all the credit because he's retired. He doesn't want to be known anyway. And I've known him since my Atlanta days. Welcome, both of you. By the way, John, I give you a special shout-out because, listen, you were the pollster for Beebe's historic re-election, 4 consecutive, 5 terms total. He will pass the first prime minister of Israel in terms of the longest-serving prime minister in the course of this term. And what's so amazing about it is it was the biggest Labor Party loss in their history, and number one. And number two, the margins were so big in terms of the right coalition led by Likud that I think the prime minister, thankfully, was reelected, even though they tried to indict him 5 weeks before an election.
Right, and it was really, really uncalled for that they would do that. But then, fortunately, the voters in Israel recognized what was going on, and it was a witch hunt, And in a conversation I had with President Trump back a few weeks ago, he said to me, he said, you know, it was just like over here with the attorney general. And I said, well, yeah, he did appoint that attorney general, but he has a 10-year independent term. But he did it. And fortunately, he won, and it was a decisive win. And today, I think the final right of center parties agreed to a coalition to recommend Netanyahu as the prime minister. So it was a decisive win for the right. And the country has moved right of center, Israel, because of the success. And Donald Trump is very, very well liked and appreciated in Israel. And the Israeli voters really appreciate the relationship that Prime Minister Netanyahu has with President Trump, where he was able to move the embassy. He was able to recognize the sovereignty of the Golan. And most important, he withdrew from that really bad Iran deal, because in recent weeks you've seen where the Hamas was shooting rockets at Israel. Those are Iranian rockets. The Iranians paid for that with the money we gave them from the bad Iran deal. So,
great job. Great job.
Very important win.
Great job, Obama and Biden, and great job for you. You know, I watched the president, and it's so funny because for once, the Republicans now are thinking ahead. There's actually a Hill story today, Matt, how they're mapping out an early 2020 strategy to retake the House. I would say that is a strong possibility for the Republicans because the president's going to be on the ticket. There was a Fox News piece, a red wave is rising. I think all that's true. You see this new Green Deal. You see a desire with all the problems we have at the border. Democrats want to take down any border barriers whatsoever, eliminate ICE. The fact that they'd get rid of the combustion engine, gas and oil, planes and cows, and everything else is free, whether you work or are unwilling to work. I just none of that is going to sell to the American people. And it's like they're doing everything you could ever want them to do if you want them to lose like I do.
Well, it's a gift to Donald Trump. He couldn't have a better scenario. You have one quote-unquote moderate Democrat in the field, and that's Joe Biden. And the left has tried to attack him every way they can. They want him out of the race. That was pretty obvious over the last few weeks. And so I think John and I, the last time we were on your show, pretty much concluded that we believe that the nominee will be substantially left of center. And this country, although millennials may feel that that's something they can embrace, most other age groups don't go that way. And you see it, in fact, you talk about the spread. John, there were state legislatures this year that took votes on resolutions urging Congress to reject the Green Dream. So they're now taking it even to the state level. So when you think about the House of Representatives and what these guys have to run on, and then the turnout effect that Donald Trump brings, because he's going to bring that base out just in huge numbers, I think the Republicans could take the House again. And I think the president's in great shape. Right now, actually, Goldman Sachs went out on a ledge and said the president will likely be reelected, but then they hedged. I wish they could be as bold in what they say about finances, and I wish they could be as correct.
No, they did definitely hedge it, but also Wall Street money now is beginning to flow towards who they think the winner will be. And they thought in 2016 it was Hillary. You know, I think even if it was Biden, it doesn't matter. Biden still would have to run on the dumb things he says about, he'd have to run on the failed record of him and Obama, and he would be pulled so far to the left in the primary that, you know, there's going to be very hardly any discernible difference between any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think you're going to see Biden as a nominee. I just think that the numbers, the number of candidates you have that are to the left, as they start to drop out, where does their support go? Unless Biden has a blowout in the first two or three primaries or in caucuses, which is highly unlikely given where they are, I just see this going to the left. It's going to be a very distinct choice, as Newt Gingrich would say, very distinct choice in the election season in November of 2020.
What did you think, John, about the president's trial balloon of sending illegal immigrants that are flooding into the country because they see the wall as being built and repaired and the money now is in the coffers and this is going to happen, and they're surging across the border to sanctuary cities, and the president is saying, you know what, because remember back in 2014 when we had a migrant surge and all of those kids, remember it was President Obama, you know, was targeting small and mid-sized cities, and now Trump said, well, we'll just send all these people
to your backyard, Nancy Pelosi. We'll send them to San Francisco. We'll send them to sanctuary states and cities. You know, and then you see somebody like Cher is freaking out, saying, well, wait, hang on a second. Well, you know, if my state can't take care of its own, how can it take care of any more? I'm like, oh, maybe you're beginning to realize the cost on the criminal justice system, the educational system, the healthcare system. But I think for the president, it's a pretty smart jujitsu move on his part to say, okay, well, if you want them so bad and you don't want to help us fix the problem, okay, we'll let them move in next door to you.
Yeah, and you know what? This issue is helping the president because, like Matt said, the Democrats are in this derangement derby that they're going so far left to be the most anti-Trump candidate in the field because they're just not giving him anything. They won't even protect our country and the borders. They won't keep criminals out. They won't keep terrorists out. They can't even take care of these people. And the Democrats are looking bad, and the president's job approval is going up. And what's different about when we helped Donald Trump, when I helped Donald Trump win the primaries, he was taking positions that the majority of Americans agreed with. The Democrats now are taking positions like socialism, like government control of health care, like open borders, that the majority of Americans disagree with. And that's the key to winning. The contrast here is just terrible because the Democrats are so deranged that they won't even come to a compromise to secure the borders. And Cher, who you mentioned, her sending a tweet out supporting the president on this, she's been really anti-Trump until this point. So when you get those kind of conversions, it's a sign that you know, the country's really moving this way because the Democrats are moving off the edge of the earth on the left.
Well said. Can you think? Look, obviously, the president's economic success is going to help. I think the president's foreign policy, we've never had better relations with Israel. We did make progress with North Korea, seemingly stalled. The president has taken tough sanctions and put them on countries like Iran and even Russia. For the guy that was supposed to have colluded with Russia, that now is behind him. I know the Mueller report is out this week, but we already know the Mueller report concluded that there's no collusion whatsoever. So whatever, you know, they're going to try and say he wanted to obstruct. He wanted to fire Mueller. He wanted to let General Flynn get off. He maybe shouldn't have fired Comey, you know, but that's it. They don't have anything. But now we're going to turn this. It's all going to flip on its head. What happens with that and the investigation of the investigators? How does this end, Matt Towery? How does this end, John McLaughlin?
Well, I think what's going to end is the scary part was having been involved in President Trump's campaign, the idea that they were able to surveil on our campaign, that they were able to spy, as Attorney General Barr correctly predicted. And the Attorney General Barr is now getting attacked by the left. He's always been a stand-up, tell-like-it-is law enforcement official. And right now, they're looking into how could this have happened? How could you basically, I mean, this is something they used to accuse Nixon of when he was president in the 70s, that he was going to corrupt the IRS and the FBI and the CIA. And, you know, the question now is, as you brought it up, is what did President Obama know? When did he know it? I mean, they were literally spying on the campaign. And that is something that,
well, let me give the last word. And Matt, what do you think now that the investigation has flipped and as John points out, yeah, they were spied upon, meaning the Trump campaign, and they abused power. It's funny to watch all these deep state actors now turning on each other.
Well, the interesting thing will be, Sean, whether the other media, the rest of the media, will cover that. It's hard to get public opinion to move if people don't realize what's going on. In fact, there was a poll that came out.
Indictments start coming in and criminal referrals go in.
I agree. And one of the things that has to happen is they have to highlight it at the same level. Because, for example, we saw a poll in which it was at least alleged that most Americans said they really didn't follow the information that was released when Barr said, gave the synopsis and showed the president hadn't done anything wrong. So it's got to be highlighted. But at some point, I think the avalanche comes and they have to start to cover it. When that happens, that just adds to the momentum to President Trump in 2020. Well,
that would mean they have to admit they've been wrong and lying for 2.5 years. Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, we got to roll. Thank you both. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour in the next half. I was still following the story out of France and Notre Dame. We'll get to that and the president's plan on the border and all the other news of the day. And, wow, how great was Tiger Woods this weekend?
Stay right here for our our final news roundup and information overload.
Socialism, highly centrally planned collectivist policies, does not work. With all due respect to those people who are talking, shouldn't forget the Soviet Union. We should have a look at Venezuela. Let's look at history. Centrally planned collectivist, these kinds of political economic models, they're despotic, they are tyrannical, they impoverish. Look at the economic performance. I don't want to forget that. I want to have this conversation. I like this conversation a lot.
The president not releasing his tax forms today. I refer you to Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, all about that. It's under audit. He's submitted hundreds of pages. You know the arguments. One thing I want to say is echo the Secretary of the Treasury, my good friend Steve Mnuchin. This administration has no intention to weaponize the IRS the way the Nixon administration did. And all this looks a little too political for us.
All right, that was Lawrence Kudlow. Glad you're with us. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. We're still following the tragedy out of France that took place, started earlier today, and that is a massive fire breaking out in the Notre Dame Cathedral, 870 years old, in the middle of a fairly large and significant $6.8 million renovation. Watching that spire collapse earlier today was a disaster. I mean, it's been out of control almost from the beginning. From all that we've heard is everyone was able to get out of there safely. They think it's construction related. Nobody's confirmed, though, 100% that is the case. But we'll continue to watch this. And by the way, it was built in 1160, completed 1260, 100 years, modified on a number of occasions throughout the century. And it is the cathedral of the Archdiocese of Paris, over 12 million people every year visiting. Anyway, we'll continue to watch that. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Larry Kudlow is with us, our good friend, who is now the president's economic advisor and head of the National Economic Council and former Reagan administration economist. Remember, he wrote the book we've featured it many times, JFK, Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of American Prosperity, which we're living through now. Mr. Kudlow, how are you, sir?
Great, Sean. Thank you.
You know, the ironic thing is I know everybody in states like New York, California, New Jersey, Illinois, they're pissed off because now they can't deduct their state and local taxes, income taxes, which they were in past years able to do. But when you really think about it, it was a benefit and a reward. We were kind of rewarding these states for raising taxes and taking in money, and it was not something that was available to states like Florida, Texas, Tennessee, or the Carolinas with that have no state income taxes or a very small state income tax. And red states were subsidizing all these big spending blue states.
Yeah, no, that's the subsidy point is fair enough. Let me just raise a point here, because this argument is not as true as a lot of governors are making it out to be. Before the tax reform bill, before the tax cuts, high-end earners, Sean, with a lot of deductions, wouldn't have gotten the deductions because they would have been captured by the alternative minimum tax, the AMT, the dreaded AMT. Now, under the new law, we basically abolished the AMT, basically 98%. So actually, a lot of the upper-end taxpayers are going to get a $10,000 deduction for state and local taxes that they wouldn't have gotten under prior law. So people forget about the AMT piece. And so they really should stop bellyaching. And let me be honest with you, the economy is booming. Jobs, investment, productivity, unemployment, wages. You know, ask the upper-end folks how their businesses and investments are doing, and the answer is they're booming, and one key reason for that is the lower tax rates that we're celebrating today, along with the rest of the program on regulation. So I'm just saying that argument just doesn't ring true to me.
But there's always the class warfare, and, you know, what I see, when you look at, for example, record low unemployment, if you look at household income increases, the people that have benefited the most, let's see, record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment. But more importantly, another important indicator is the jump in terms of real wages
that have been experienced by low and middle income Americans, the people that frankly deserve it, even though we obviously have a tax system where the, you know, top 20% pretty much pay almost all the taxes.
That's right. That's exactly right. The top 20% pay almost all the taxes. Let me go see. The top 10% pay about 70% of the taxes.
Yeah.
The bottom 50% pay 3% of the income tax.
Actually, it's less than 3. It's 2.7.
Okay, 2.7. Stand corrected. So the argument that the most successful earners, the rich, so-called, look, I like rich people. I want everybody to get rich, including the non-rich. It's just, you know, they do pay the freight. And at a certain point in time, as the evidence piles up, if you keep raising tax rates on the successful earners and investors, you're going to get lower revenues and you're going to sink the economy. That's what happens when you raise tax rates. Just like, take a look at my home state of Connecticut, for example, and there are other home states. Look at the U.S. in the prior administration. So that's not going to work. None of that's going to work. Senator Sanders came out with universal Medicare, Sean. That would take 15%. If you add that to the Green New Deal, we estimate
94 trillion.
15% of GDP within 10 years, and 180 million Americans with health policies would lose them. 180 million people.
No, they're saying that. Kamala Harris and others are saying they would not allow the option of private health care insurance. It's gone. And it would be
180 million people. Just imagine what that means. So you want to decimate the economy. You want to take everybody's health care away. You want to emulate the Soviet Union. You want to emulate Venezuela. You know, I plead with people to be rational and reasonable, to look at history and look at the evidence. These collectivist policies, socialist policies, will wind up not only taking away our liberty, they'll impoverish the economy. Let's be serious about this.
Well, I'll give you the quote. It's become one of my favorite quotes. Look at New York, which has, you know, when you look at New York state income taxes, New York State city taxes, income taxes, New York City income taxes. Then you combine sales tax, highest property taxes in the country and everything else. This is what you get, a $2.3 billion shortfall. And Andrew Cuomo actually accurately described why he has the shortfall.
We have one of the most progressive tax codes in the United States, which is a good thing, which means the richer you are, the more you pay. However, that presents a very fragile economy because then you are relying on a very small number of people for the vast amount of your tax dollars. 1% of the taxpayers pay nearly half of all the taxes. 1% pay nearly half of all those taxes. Those 1% are the richest people in the state, they're the richest people in the country, and they are the most mobile people in the country. And you see the chart on the bottom. Top 1%, about 46%. Top 5%, 63% of all the revenue. Top 10%, 74% of all the revenue. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. We did. Now, God forbid, the rich leave.
Well, they're leaving New York and New Jersey and Illinois and California in droves. And Larry Kudlow, I mean, states like states like Texas and Florida picked up nearly 400,000 new people, you know, migrating from other states.
Well, the incentives matter. Look, I've recently spoken with Governor Cuomo, who is a friend. His dad was a great friend, even with political disagreements, good folks. And I think his analysis, what you just played, is really right. By the way, to his credit, Governor Cuomo cut the New York State corporate tax and really helped the economy. He did that in his first term. I think it was a good thing. And, you know, my great hope is, and I've said this to him, that he would certainly make some income tax reductions because all the reasons he just made during that clip, I think it's very accurate. And I think it's true for the overall economy. And look, you know, again, I come back to the theme.
Now, what President Trump's policies are, rebuilding the American economy, restarting incentives, right? We're not punishing wealthy people. We're rewarding success. The war against business and energy is over. The low tax rates, which have affected the entire economy, the deregulation, the energy rollout, the trade reforms. We're seeing, you know, what our critics, Sean, said couldn't happen, right? 3% growth. Low unemployment. By the way, one of the best parts is females. Females were the biggest job creators in 2018. They were the biggest additions to the labor force. And by the way, people coming out of the woodwork who weren't even counted as unemployed because of higher wages, number one, over 3%, and better job training and reskilling, what Ivanka Trump has been pushing. So anyway, it all makes sense. There's a rebuilding of the economy. Let's keep it this way, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let's hang on to these policies.
Well, what did Reagan say?
They're going to go on.
You know, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And I think that will be a primary question when the president comes up to re-election. What do you make of, for example, there's 100 Democrats, I believe, now in the House or close to it, and the Senate. You have many presidential candidates are buying into and supporting the new Green Deal. Now, the new Green Deal, say, coupled with Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax, which, by the way, 15 European countries adopted, only four kept it, which I think speaks volumes because so many people moved away after another bite at the apple after you've paid all your taxes. But that would be free daycare, but also free guaranteed Medicare for all, a government-run health care system. They would take over the energy sector in America. There would be no oil or gas production. There would be no combustion engine, but you get free even, I guess, pre-K education all the way through college, government-run, of course, government-run health care, government-run industry of energy. You'd have the even a government-healthy, guaranteed healthy food department, job, salary, vacations, and on and on, whether you're willing or unwilling to work. And by the way, after that, they said, well, airplanes need to go and cows probably have to go as well because they create too many CO2 gases.
You know, here's what I can't figure, Sean, like it's politically or economically. Right now, we are witnessing a rising tide of prosperity. The first real rising tide probably in 15 or 20 years. And here are these other policies coming in, these big central planning collectivist socialist policies that would lead to deep, deep recession. As I said earlier, we estimate here you could lose as much as 15% of the entire gross domestic product inside 10 years under these kinds of policies. Why not let the rising tide of prosperity continue? Why not join us? Why not have more tax reform? Why not have more regulatory reform? Why not have more energy pipelines and LNG terminals? Why not have more trade reform? The things that are generating growth, we need more help. The Democrats seem to be coming in, and I don't like to be partisan about this. I mean, I wrote a book about JFK, who was a tax-cutting supply-side Democrat. Those were the days. I'm just saying, let the rising tide of prosperity flourish. Don't roll it back and put us into a terrible deep recession. It just doesn't make any common sense to me. That's what I don't understand.
Even the New York Times had to admit today, if you're an American taxpayer, you probably got a tax cut last year, and there's a good chance you don't believe it. And then it goes on to say, well, not even one in 10 households actually got the tax increase, meaning the houses that already paid the taxes, they keep paying. So it benefited those people that need it the most.
Yeah, it's a pretty good article by Tankersley, Jim Tankersley. He's a pretty good reporter, actually. And I don't know what it is, this view that people don't like tax cuts or people didn't get the tax cuts. I mean, left of center, right of center, roughly 70% of people got tax cuts. We doubled the standard deduction, and, you know, we did some good social policy. We built up the child tax credit, for example, doubled the standard deduction.
Well, we're running out of time. What about the debt issue?
Well, the best way to deal with debt, my friend, grow the economy to its max, and then try to limit government best you can.
I like the Connie Mack penny plan or the Trump five nickel plan. All right, yeah, I gotta got to run.
Five.
All right, Larry Kudlow, thank you. Appreciate it. We're still watching this disaster unfold in Paris. Fire in flames, the 870-year-old Notre Dame Cathedral. We'll have more on that, and you meet a MS-13 gang member next.
Body of a young Hispanic female was found in the 9900 block of Sharp's Crest, Houston, Texas. The victim appeared to have been executed and left in the street. We were able to identify a group of MS-13 gang members who we believe are responsible.
Police in New York saying the suspect in a series of brutal crimes is a gang member and illegal immigrant who's been deported 4 times. Tommy Vladim Alvarado Ventura is accused of stabbing 2 women and sexually assaulting a 2-year-old girl.
Suffolk County police announcing the arrest of 17 gang members after a series of violent incidents, including the massacre of 4 young men.
They used 2 females to lure 4 young males to the park, and they were brutally bludgeoned and stabbed and hacked up with machetes. Ugh. It's gruesome. I mean, it's not like you're shooting somebody from 100 feet away. You're getting blood splattered onto you.
The killers slashed Perez's neck. Today, Alexandria police announced 3 suspects, an adult male, 17-year-old boy, and 16-year-old girl. Investigators say those men are MS-13 gang members.
Yesterday, 3 subjects responsible for 2 attempted murders with bladed weapons and in one incident firing a handgun at the victim were taken into custody last night. All purport to be MS-13 members.
19-year-old Miguel Lopez Abrega was charged with first-degree murder of the victim. As the press release says, the victim had been stabbed over 100 times.
Investigators say the Queens man is a member of MS-13 and is responsible for killing a Valley Stream teen earlier this year. According to court documents, Julio Cesar Gonzalez Espance's brutally beaten body was discovered inside the Massapequa Preserve in late March. Police say he was shot and beaten with a large knife from machete and may have been left there for several weeks.
20-year-old Victor Manuel Fuentes and 5 teenagers ages 17 and 16 who have not been named are part of the Dangerous International MS-13 gang and have been robbing Hispanic men at gunpoint in Lake Worth. 2 of those armed robberies were deadly.
Blanca Maritza Lopez was shot and killed Sunday evening inside the apartment she shared with her boyfriend. According to court documents, neighbors heard 2 people arguing and then a loud boom. Investigators say he called 911 and then left. They say he dropped their 3-month-old daughter on a relative's porch, and he's been on the run since.
He is believed to be a member of the gang MS-13 who has bragged about killing people.
On Friday in federal court, MS-13 gang member Alder Garcia Miranda pled guilty to racketeering conspiracy, including the murder of a 23-year-old man in Frederick.
MS-13 gang members were rounded up this morning, charged in 3 murders. 16-year-old Kayla Cuevas and her 15-year-old best friend Nisa Mickens brutally beaten to death.
All right, so that was obviously a montage of victims of crime. How many times have we had angel moms and dads on this program that lost their loved ones, permanent separation, as we call it? Nobody seems to really care. Pelosi wouldn't even meet with angel moms and dads outside of her own office. She was too busy doing what we don't know. If in a 2-year period you have over 4 million homicides, over 30,000 violent sexual assaults against women, over 100,000 violent assaults against other Americans by illegal immigrant criminals, at what point do you not say, this is a problem? Now, I know that Nancy Pelosi and company think the wall is immoral. And I know that you have Beto Bozo complaining over the weekend about Donald Trump. He's on immigration. He's an arsonist who wants credit for putting out the fire. And I think the president very cleverly said, well, if you think this is such a good idea to take in all these people that are not Americans, that don't respect our laws, our sovereignty, our borders, and we don't have an opportunity to vet them, to check their backgrounds, their associations, whether or not their intent is to become a member of our family or their intent is something nefarious, well, then what are we going to do? You know, 90% of heroin, yeah, that comes right across the southern border. And now we have fentanyl on top of heroin. And we have presidential candidate Andrew Yang wants to decriminalize fentanyl and heroin. How dumb is that? Really a genius there. Joining us now, Casey Diaz, who was a violent gangster. And by the way, his crimes caught up to him, landing him not only in jail, but solitary confinement at the age of 16. And he talks about his road back to becoming a nonviolent citizen and somebody that contributes to society. He's written a book. It's called The Shot Caller, A Latino Gang Banger's Miraculous Escape from a Life of Violence to a New Life in Christ. He's the son of El Salvadorian immigrants, and he was brought to Los Angeles at the age of two. An abusive, impoverished family life propelled him at only 11 years of age into the Rockwood Street Locos gang. And he was willing to do anything to be number one, but years of chasing rival gang members led to a dramatic ambush and an arrest by the LAPD. And that's when, at 16, he was sentenced to more than 12 years in solitary confinement at one of California's toughest prisons and as one of the state's most violent offenders. You were in the Rockwood Street Locos gang. Is that the... Okay. Now, I know in Los Angeles you have the Crips and the Bloods, and those wars have been going on. Did you battle them as well?
Yeah. You know, there's always a race war as well, in particular with Los Angeles gangs. Yeah, that's been an item for many years.
Let's talk about some of the violent things you did. You started at 11. How do you start becoming a gangbanger at 11?
And that's the thing, you know, what people that don't know the truth and how gangs work, you're recruited very young. I mean, we gangs particularly look for young, you know, members that or potential members that where there's no father involved, where there's no mentors involved. And that's who they go after. I mean, that's the brutal truth, is that they will look for the vulnerable, and that's who they'll entice. And you know, when you come from a low-income city and there's no father figure, there's nothing like that, the streets become your family. And it's very easy to get enticed and walk into one.
And what about, like, I'm sure your parents, like most immigrant parents, I know my grandparents had no money when they came here. And they ended up from Ireland to Ellis Island. They had no money at all whatsoever. And so they're working full time. Did they know that you were hanging out with the wrong crowd at that time?
Well, you know, my mom, she worked very early in the morning, 4 in the morning, and then she wouldn't get back until 10, 11 at night. And my father, you know, he's an alcoholic and very abusive person towards my mom and towards me. But he would beat my mom. I mean, almost, I don't think I could ever remember one week where she was not beaten by him. So, you know, I was left to my own, you know, demise very early in my life. You know, very little interaction with parents.
So you basically were raised on the streets then?
Pretty much, yeah.
And when did you first try drugs yourself?
Well, drugs for me, you know, I've tried here and there, but it wasn't my thing. It was the gang violence that really drove me to a life of crime. It was just the brutality of it. You know, you have different kind of gang members in every gang. You have the guys that what we call wannabes. You know, they dress the part, talk the talk, and you pretty much they never do anything outside of, you know, little stuff like, and I don't want to say little, but you know, burglaries and stuff that's not looked at as by the gang as important stuff. And then you have gang members that are wanting to top each other up, and you know, then you're going into the very violent crimes, as robbery, home invasions, kidnappings, all the way up to murder. So you know, that all exists inside every gang.
What are the worst things you've done? Have you killed people?
Well, at 16, I was arrested for a murder of a rival gang member.
I didn't ask if you were arrested. I asked if you killed people.
Yes.
How many? One person.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about it. And how old were you?
I was 16. And I was in a little hamburger joint. And back in the 80s, you were able to, you know, drive in these trucks, in the back of these trucks. And I was minding my own business, just having a burger inside this joint. And I was recognized by this gang. They came in there. A fight ensued. And I ran outside to where I had a stolen car. And I had a sawed-off shotgun there. And the first guy that came at me was the one that I ended up ending his life.
And that's when you were then arrested by LAPD, sentenced to more than 12 years in solitary confinement. What prison was it?
New Folsom State Prison.
That is a serious, hard prison, right?
It is. You know, my first meal was served by the Hillside Strangler there.
Now, were you in solitary the whole 12 years?
No, I was in solitary for three years and some change.
All right, so you're 16 years old and you're in solitary confinement and you got, you know, 12 years total. I mean, you must be going out of your mind in that cell.
You know, when you're at that kind of level of violence and in that kind of category inside the gang, you really don't care. You're very careless, and life is very cheap, and you know, it's almost like a game, and a game that you're actually enjoying. That's the reality of it.
So the book goes into the story about this elderly woman who reaches out to you, paid you a visit, and all of a sudden you began to quietly, I guess, reflect and sort of like get a spiritual awakening, I assume, when you were in solitary confinement.
That's correct, yeah. This lady, she belonged to a very small church, and they would come there once a month, and she just interacted with me. She was very bold. And just a strong lady, and she made it a point to tell me that, you know, she's going to pray for me, and that Jesus was going to use me. And I didn't have any religious background, or I never had opened a Bible, I wasn't interested in any of that. So for me to hear that from her, it was just kind of it was strange to me. I thought she was had some loose marbles and didn't know what she was doing, but she knew exactly what she was doing, and she was praying and interceding for her. My life, and I had an encounter with Christ in my cell, in that solitary cell.
What happened?
And which made me step down from my gang leadership there at New Folsom State Prison.
Isn't that a problem if you step down or step out of a gang? Don't you then, you know, become a target?
Absolutely, yeah. A hit was put on my life. A green light is what we called it, because I stepped down, and they sent one of my very own gang members to do the, you know, to what we call taking out the trash. That meant, you know, when you got to get rid of somebody in there. And they sent one of my very own, and that was the first person that I actually led to Christ in there. And there was a few other gang members, one founder of the MS-13 that was there. I led him to Christ as well. And for 2 years, we went through some pretty big persecution for stepping down from our leadership.
So did it stop at some point? Did they remove the hit?
Well, what happened was there was a big giant prison riot there after 2 years, and they ended up shipping all these inmates, the Hispanic inmates, out into other prisons. And I talk about that in my book, The Shock Collar, of exactly in detail of what took place after that. And that's pretty much when the beatings stopped. Evangelism began in that prison yard.
Tell us about the experience. I mean, you had some, it's not just this woman that kind of lit a spark in you. Something happened personally. What happened?
Well, again, I didn't have any Bible teacher or anything like that. I just wasn't interested in all that. But, I won't go into fine details on it. I'd rather have the reader, read about it in the Shock Collar. But it was one of those moments where a decision has to be made whether you're going to continue in this lifestyle or God touched your heart and a change has to be made. A decision has to be made. And for me, that's what it was. And, you know, I never knew how to pray. Nobody had ever taught me how to pray. But I had such an encounter in there with him that I knew that I could never deny. And, you know, it just changed everything about my life.
Kind of like once the light goes on, even if you wanted to turn it off, you can't.
Exactly. Yes, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's called a conscience. Now, what other acts of violence were you involved in?
Oh, there was many robberies. Many robberies. There was a lot of stabbings. A lot of.
You stabbed a lot of people.
That was my preference. Yeah. I didn't like the drive-by shootings. I thought they were very, it was just kind of easy, and that just wasn't my thing. My thing was to run into rival territory and grab somebody and then stab them. That was my thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we really wish you the best. I believe in redemption. I believe in it, and I wish you the best, Casey Diaz. And I hope everything works out for you.
Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I appreciate it. Thank you. God bless you and all you do. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, a full coverage of this fire at this 870-year-old Notre Dame Cathedral. Looking into the cause, we'll let you know if we have any updates. We'll have what this week is going to unfold like. And we have Mark Meadows, John Solomon, Sarah Carter, and Joe Concha and Rachel Campos Duffy. All coming up 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox. Hope you'll join us. See you tonight at 9 back here tomorrow.